Welcome back, everybody. It's Friday afternoon, and it's time for another episode of Giles McCoy Live, the spot for tech, hi-fi, and gaming. Today is episode 307. That's right, season 3, episode 7. And joining us this afternoon for the first time is Hans Lohmann from Infigo Audio. Hans, welcome to the show. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you, Giles. Thank you for having me on the show today.
Oh, I'm super excited. So, you know, I've been aware of your brand for a while now. And if I remember correctly, I think I saw you at, did they have some of your equipment at like the home entertainment show a couple of years ago or something like that? I think I saw your
gear. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. We've been at the home entertainment show in Long Beach.
Right. And then obviously Axpona and that kind of stuff. You know, I really love the design of the gear, and we'll get to all this stuff later. We'll talk about it a little bit, but just to say, I'm really excited to have you on the show to talk about your gear, because it's really cool. Now, there might be a few folks out there that aren't familiar with you and the gear, so maybe to kick things off, you could tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about the company.
All right. Yeah. So, well, originally I'm from the Netherlands, as you can hear in my accent and probably see in my name as well. I moved with my whole family in 2005.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said, and you're wearing orange as well. So.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's just a little Dutch twist indeed. Yeah. And so, yeah, in 2005, we moved the whole family to Canada, to Kelowna, British Columbia, which is roughly in a valley between Vancouver and Calgary. I am a electronics engineer by profession, specialized in digital and analog technology. One of my big passions is music. So I play trumpet, French horn, guitar, and have always just enjoyed music so much. So it is actually quite a logical thing that at some point where you have some time left over, you start engineering stuff that, of course, has to do with music. That has actually turned into a little bit of a gotten out of hands hobbies, which has now ultimately resulted into a full blown company.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, you know, maybe one day at a later time, we could talk a little bit about the music stuff and trumpet in particular, because that's my favorite instrument. And when I was younger, I played, you know, I always dreamed of being Maynard Ferguson, right? And, or maybe a Doc Severinsen and, you know, really having that forward kind of lead trumpet sound and being able to play up into the stratosphere. So that I love that stuff. I think that's a great story. And I think it's really cool when you have someone that has, you know, that musical knowledge and passion, and then you mix it in with the technology, right? Because I think those things work together to really help you understand what you need out of a piece of equipment, right? So it's just a person who says, okay, I need to build this thing that'll do something, and they build it, right? And there's, you know, they don't really understand that practical application. But when you're a musician, you really have that visceral understanding of what this gear needs to do. And so that's really cool. Awesome. Now, as far as the products go, I think there are three different things that the company sells today. And maybe we can talk a little bit about those. And, you know, there's a Method 3 and a Method 4 and cables. And what are all those things? I mean, when somebody looks at Infigo Audio, what are the kinds of products that they can expect to find?
So Infigo Audio, it came actually forth from a whole development out of the past. So let me just try to...
Yeah, please. I'd love to hear the story.
So I started out to figure out why, if you take, for instance, a audio setup, and you change nothing but the amplifier, all of a sudden, the one thing that's supposed to not change anything to the sound, but just sit there and just amplify the sound, not making any difference to it, but just only making it louder, it completely changes the sound. So swapping amplifiers was, to me, a thing that irked the engineer in me. Like, why is that one amplifier completely different than the other one? Why, it's not supposed to be, you know? And as engineers, we're always, of course, irking to optimize things. So I thought, well, there's actually an interesting thing here to research. So that actually opened a bit of a rabbit hole, and the rabbit hole is very deep, as you all know, I think.
Yes.
Once you go into the high-end audio territory, there is not an end that I know of, pretty much. It's there's always something that you can change. So, that actually led to the development of amplifiers first and foremost. And those have finally resulted over the years into a full-blown Class A amplifier with a whole bunch of twists that we will talk into a little bit later, that is now known as the Method 3. The Method 3 is a monoblock amplifier that's fully Class A, but it's not getting hot. And that's an interesting technology that we'll touch on.
Okay, great. And yeah. So how big is this monoblock? Is it like this big or just so people can get it scaled?
Not extremely big. It's roughly 1 foot wide, 1 foot high, and about 1 foot and a half deep.
Okay.
And it weighs about 70 pounds. So it's not overly big for a monoblock.
Right,
but it's a little different form factor. It's designed in such a way that it actually belongs to the speaker. It'll sit very close to it and looks like a nice little piece of furniture next to your speaker.
Okay. All right, so that's the Method 3.
Yes.
And then you also sell the Method 4.
That's correct. And the Method 4 is the perfect companion to drive any of these amplifiers. It's essentially a DAC, but it can totally replace a preamplifier if you only have digital sources. So at a lot of the shows, we've been using the Method 4 as a standalone DAC, which then drives the Method 3 power amplifiers, so that you basically can see the thing as a digital preamplifier.
Oh, I've got you. So it's got volume control and all that kind of stuff built into the DAC.
It's all there.
And then I assume that it would have all the standard kind of DAC inputs. So you've got maybe USB and optical and AES.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Okay. And various SPDIF inputs like B and C. We have RCA connectors, all of that stuff that you want to connect to the DAC.
Right. Awesome. And then on the output side, you've what, single-ended and then balanced?
Yes. And they each have their own separate circuits. So you can actually use them together to drive various amplifiers if you have a multi-channel setup. And they each have their own output circuit amplifiers, so they won't interfere each other.
Right on. Now, do they output at a different voltage?
They actually don't. So that would be a different sort of thing. You would have separate volume controls, and we have not implemented that. So you would have to have separate volume controls on your various amplifiers. But most amplifiers, for instance, we sometimes use these to drive a subamp for a surround or a swarm array of bass amplifiers.
Right.
And so then they usually have their own gain settings so that you can control everything, because it's such a unique sort of thing. It's very rare that you have one volume setting that just fits everything.
I agree with that. And you know, while people are listening to the episode, you know, I would urge them to take a look at the images, and I don't have any to pull up right now, but these pieces of equipment are gorgeous. I mean, the I don't know what the right term is, the industrial design or the aesthetics or however you want to think about it, but they look really good, right?
And we like to say that they're aesthetically pleasing. That's at least how they are designed.
There's absolutely a lot
of honest materials in them. So in some of the amplifiers, you can actually even see the CNC machine marks, you know, so that you know that everything is actually machined. There is no cheap materials in there. Even the heat sinks are actually quite special, because usually one uses extruded profiles. But there is a drawback to those. They actually work as a xylophone. If all of the heatsink fins are all the exact same, well, try on an amplifier. If you ping the thing,
it'll resonate. Yeah.
Yeah. So ours are actually shaped in curves. And because of that, these curves are actually also even made out of prime number ratios. So there is no resonance frequency that can happen in any of the fins. So you can touch it and you'll hear it sonically dead. Which is great, because they sit very close to a speaker. And if there's a kick drum coming out, you want that kick drum just to only come out of the speaker and not be accompanied by a ching that comes from a sort of a xylophone, you know? Because everything is audible, really. Everything.
So at a, I assume you'll be at Expona, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll be at room 476.
Right on. So everybody out there, Expona, room 476. I will be visiting you at room 476, and I want to see this in action.
Oh, yeah.
I assume you have to take it apart, or is this part of the external
It's actually on the external. Yeah, you can very easily see it. It's just on the external where you can see these curves.
Okay, that's outstanding. I've got to check this out. This is another reason why Exponent and other shows like that are super cool, because these things you might not be able to see in another way. And we'll talk about that, you know, how people can see this gear and hear it and that kind of stuff later. But that's outstanding. And so I think what makes this gear so special are these things, and these items are not obvious when you look at a web page quickly or you look at a photograph. You know, these design items, you don't know about them unless you really get in and ask these questions. And I want to dig into this stuff a little bit more here in just a second, but I guess the last product to kind of close out this topic are cables. You have a line of cables as well.
That's correct.
Can you talk about those just a little bit?
Yeah. So it was originally not really the plan to go do cables, because that's just a can of worms in itself, you know?
Certainly.
However, when we were doing the development from method 4 connecting into the method 3s, one of the things that started to just really play a role was the cables that they're connecting in between these two pieces of equipment. And those became the bottleneck so badly. We've used lots and lots of different cables. We've tried a lot of things, and that's where we always ran into some bottleneck. So we started to look at what actually caused these bottlenecks, and that's what we incorporate into our own cables. So they are definitely different. They're built from different materials than your average cable that you'll find, even if they're high-end audio cables. And a lot of the material choices are so crucial. It's really an interesting phenomenon that can happen. If you look into a cable very deeply, there are so many little details that have an effect on the quality of the signal that eventually comes through. And just to give you an example, if you look at some of the materials that are made out of like polymer molecules, the insulator between, for instance, the core and the shield is usually made from something that might involve these polymer molecules. So the problem with those is that they have a charge. They actually want to align themselves with whatever electrical field happens around them. Now, because they're sitting inside of this material, they are not really able to do so. So what happens is that you get a little bit of friction, if you want, because they have this natural tendency to align with the field. Well, this field moves with our audio signal, so these molecules actually want to vibrate along with this signal. So they eat up a little bit of power out of the signal to try move.
Sure, yeah, because that movement, transitions that heat, right?
Yeah. If you think about it, it's crazy. You would think like, yeah, those are so small. But the interesting thing is that our ears are so susceptible to the tiniest little thing. And it's exactly in the small little pieces of signal where the beauty is. It's the little edges around a note that an instrument plays. That makes the difference between something that's like breathtakingly beautiful or that's just a reproduction of, for instance, a trumpet.
Sure, sure. So I guess the take-home message there is that there are characteristics of the cabling that help it not degrade the sound, the quality of the waveform as it passes through the speaker wire, as opposed to other cabling where it could degrade that to some extent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that becomes
it's super important,
right? Okay, awesome. No, good to know. That is the first time I've had that explained in that way to me, and it seems to make sense. That's cool. That's cool.
And that's only one of the aspects on the cable. Imagine ten different sorts of things that are happening in a similar type of way. You know, it's another rabbit hole. And the problem is, there's rabbit holes everywhere, wherever you go, and it's fascinating. You run into like infinite options, pretty much, that have some kind of influence on the sound.
Certainly. I want to jump into into one of those rabbit holes, right? So, I receive questions quite often about different types of amplification, right? And by that, I mean like class A versus class AB versus class D versus all of those things, right? Yeah. Now, the Method 3 is a pure class A amplifier, correct?
And it's class A, yes.
Yeah, and it operates at, what, 250 watts per channel? Is that correct?
That's correct.
So for the uninitiated, 250 watts of class A power is pretty crazy.
That's
a lot of class A power. And typically, while you're listening to music on a class A amp outputting 250 watts power, not that people would necessarily listen at 250 watts because that's really loud, right? But that would generate enough heat where you could also cook on it and maybe heat your house and all these other things. So my question is, why class A as a first question, right? Mm-hmm. So why choose that technology over saying, I want to engineer some other type of amplification type? And then after we understand why class A, how do you then implement class A in a way that is the best for your working environment, right? So how do you eliminate heat? How do you make it functionally workable in somebody's home stereo system?
That is a great question, Giles, and it's certainly a rabbit hole, and it's very deep, but it's very interesting. So class A is one of the ways of amplification, but let me just first go a little bit into what an amplifier actually does.
Please.
If you look at the signal, as we all know, it comprises of a positive and a negative part, and so it moves very rapidly on the rhythm of the music between this positive and this negative part. So conventional amplifiers are basically only able to do half of this signal. So you have a positive part and a negative part. And the interesting phenomena happens when the signal goes from this positive part to the negative part, because then the negative part all of a sudden needs to basically take over the baton, if you will.
Sure.
Now that needs to go so fast, so smooth, that there is no such thing as what we call crossover distortion. If there is just the slightest hesitation between the two parts of this amplifier, you will get crossover distortion, and that's really a bad thing. So to do this, one of the solutions is to put a current through all of these output devices so that they're always at the ready to start. And that essentially is class A. However, if you make that current so big that it's always enough to drive the speaker, that's a brute force class A amplifier. And that's the exact thing that you just described. You can cook an egg on it. It's all that heat is going to be dissipated into heat, really. So this amplifier is going to be really very hot, but it'll sound outstanding because there's no crossover distortion. One of the things that usually is sort of a trade-off is make the amplifier have a certain current that's a bit lower so that it's not getting super hot. And at some point, they will switch over to what we call class AB. So if the current is enough to drive the speaker to, let's say, 5 watts, it will operate 5 watts in class A, and then the remainder will just actually switch one of the parts off because there's just not enough current to go right through both the speaker and to the other end of the amplifier.
So is that the distinction between A and AB, meaning in class A, there's enough current so that, you know, both ends are functional at all times, but AB is turning on and
all
off,
so to speak? Switches off. Yeah, right. So if the signal is positive, the negative part switches off because all of the current actually goes through the speaker. So there's right. No current anymore for the negative side. And conversely, if you go to the other side, if you have a negative part of the signal, the positive part stops. Right. So that will create a bit of crossover distortion. And what you'll notice is that the moment you'll switch over into this class AB, the amplifier starts to sound a little different. And especially if you play louder, you'll get the urge to sort of tune it down a little because it starts to sound loud.
Okay.
Now, with a class A amplifier, you'll actually not experience this thing. You can turn up the volume. If it stays in class A, there is no part where all of a sudden you have this urge to bring it down. So that is in the one side, the beautiful thing of a class A amplifier, but also it may actually lead to turning the volume up more and more and more because it sounds so pleasing.
Maybe you do need all those 250 watts.
Except when you have neighbors very close by.
Certainly. Right on. Cool. So What's your opinion on Class A versus Class D amplification, right? Are those like completely different use cases? And why did you choose A over D for this implementation?
Yeah, they are indeed completely different. If you look at the operation of a Class A amplifier, I just went into that a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's a pure analog approach. And the one thing that I have actually not mentioned is that the Invigo Method 3 amplifier is Class A, where we keep all transistors conducting at all times, but we do a little different twist. So what we do, we add 25 watts to the signal that's being used by the speaker. So we essentially add it on top so that always both sides will conduct at all times. And okay, that actually makes that amplifier stay in Class A operation. Nothing switches off. You will never get crossover distortion, but it's a bit of a twist to Class A. So that way we do not get that hot. So Class D, on the other hand, is another way to actually eliminate heat. And it's done by doing a switching between two voltages really fast in such a way that the speaker will see the sort of like average of these voltages that it switches
right to. And so that's when people talk about Class D, they'll talk about the switching frequency. And so the higher that number is that, does that typically result in like a smoother kind of?
Well, that depends sound a little bit, because there's always trade-offs. Of course, you will want to have that as high as possible because it needs to be completely far away from the audio band. Right. So if we are interested in, for instance, DC all the way up to like 50 kilohertz or something, you will need mm-hmm. to have a switching frequency that is far beyond 50 kilohertz, at least twice as much. So okay, you will want to have something that's more than 100 kilohertz switching. The higher you go with switching, the more demanding that gets for the switching elements. And so they need to be able and very nimble to do this. So there's always a little bit of a trade-off. So if you go too far in high frequencies and the elements aren't capable of doing that properly anymore, then of course you will introduce other problems. So there's always a little bit of this trade-off. One of the good advantages, and where a Class D is actually a very good amplifier to use, is if you need a very small footprint, for instance, in concerts, you will not want to move around 10 kilowatt amplifiers when they're not Class D, because they're just simply too big, right, too big to handle. Also, the efficiency. No matter what, Class A and Class AB amplifiers are usually generating heat, where Class D amplifiers are the lowest heat-generating amplifiers. So for that purpose, it's also very good. So if you have, for instance, a surround amplifier with seven outputs or something, you may sooner look into a Class D amplification because of the amount of heat with all these channels than seven Class A amplifiers for the same reason.
That makes sense. And from your point of view, it sounds like when you're really looking for that best two-channel audio experience, that the Class A is the right way to go?
That is, in my opinion, the right way to go, yeah. And so I am absolutely addicted to the purity of a Class A. It's just all analog. So there is no trade-off in switching. There's no switching frequencies in there. There's nothing that could essentially just somehow have a negative impact on the signal. We're just very purely amplifying the signal in the most pure way there is. So that's, for me, Class A all the way.
Oh, awesome. Great. Well, thanks for the masterclass in amplification technologies. What I would like to do now is kind of turn the corner and go back to the Method 4, right? Which is your preamp DAC, I guess you could call it. Now, when you build a DAC, the, you know, kind of the heart of the DAC, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but this is at least how I think about it, really is that, you know, you have all of this equipment and your inputs and outputs and all that kind of stuff, but at the heart you have the silicon that's actually doing the digital to analog. And there are different versions or flavors and brands of chip that you can select. So could you tell us a little bit about the chip that is used in your DAC and why you elected to go with that technology as opposed to like a Burr Brown or somebody else, right?
So
what's
the first there? to be honest, that's a fun thing. So you mentioned Burr Brown. That is actually where I started out to build DAC designs with. The Burr Brown chipset is a very well known. They were pioneering into the multi-bit DACs. They were one of the, I'd say, very first ones that generated the 24-bit DACs. And just outstanding DAC chips. However, a couple of new brands came along, and one of them is ESS, and they happen to have their design headquarters in Kelowna, of all places. And that's exactly where I live. So at that point, of course, it starts to become logical to just run into each other. So one day, some guys from a spin-off from ESS called Resonescence Labs came into my assembly shop, which is where I'm sitting here. This is actually where all this Infigo equipment gets built and born. And they asked for their DAC if I could build the first 100 boards. So, well, I told them, okay, I am into DAC design and into amplifier design myself. So we just can maybe collaborate a little bit. So that's what we actually started to do. So they built their first DACs. They were built in this shop here. And they more or less were technical people rather than audiophiles. Well, I'm an audiophile at heart. I'm mildly passionate about this, if you can hear. And they asked for some help with the high-end audio shows because, yeah, they were really not into that too much. Their idea was also just to put on a couple of high-res files and then just let people listen to it, which is okay, of course, but there's so much more that makes these shows interesting than just meets the ear. So I started consulting for Resonescence Labs, did that for many years until in 2019, unfortunately, they had to pull the plug. And that is essentially also why Infigo Audio was born. I just knew like, okay, so if I'm not going to do anything with Resonescence anymore, then I just need to bring this amplifier to the market myself. And that's how Infigo Audio actually came to be. Okay. So now back to the DAC chip. So it's kind of logical if you're so close to ESS that you can have good information. I've worked with the engineers there for quite a few years. So I have a lot of insight into how you can build a very, very good DAC with that particular chipset. And that is the sole reason that I chose this chip. It's a chip that's been chosen by a lot of other high-end brands, and the results are various. Some people build very, very good sounding DACs with them. Some other brands build, unfortunately, very bad sounding DACs with them. It goes either way, you know? There's almost no, like, in-between with these particular ES9038 chips. So the way that we do this is by having a box full of power supplies. Every single subcircuit in the DAC has their own ultralinear power supply. Oh, so wow. There's 15 different analog power supplies just to basically feed these subcircuits around the DAC chips. It is super important to do so. And then there's class A little amplifiers around them for the output circuitry. That also helps a lot. They all, of course, have their own power supplies again. So essentially, the chipset is super important, but I would say the power supplies that drive everything around it is equally important.
So this, you know, this brings up a good question that a lot of people have asked, have posed to me, and I have my opinion, and I'm curious if my opinion, and it sounds like it might match up with yours, but a lot of people will say, or ask, when I'm looking for a DAC, what is the most important thing, right? Because from I think a like an empirical point of view, a DAC, they all should have the same output, right? So you have digital in and analog out, and at the output of that DAC, that analog signal, if you look at any DAC, those should match up, right? If you want to stay faithful to that sound, it should be the same. And a job of a DAC should be to faithfully take that digital input and turn it into the exact audio analog output. However, that's not true, right? The implementation
is the same problem all over again.
Yeah,
it's the same problem that started me looking into amplifiers. They should actually not sound, but they do. They have their own signature. Yeah.
So the question is, people say, do DACs sound different, and why do they sound different? The short answer that I give, and tell me if I'm right or wrong, or if, you know, what the nuance is. The answer is they should sound the same. However, they don't, and they don't sound the same. And it's not necessarily because of the difference in the DAC chips. It's really the implementation of the system as a whole to produce that analog output that's sent to the amplifier. So how close am I to truth with that answer?
I think that is actually spot on. So that also explains why there is a difference. Even when you have the same chipset, but used in a different way, you get different results. Just to give you that example, all these power supplies, they are there for a reason. If you just only use a couple of power supplies, you just parallel everything and then expect the chipset to perform the same, it's not going to happen. It is very critical. And the essence of the music actually comes not from the large signal swings, but it's in those little tiny details that's around the edges of the signal again. So in the small parts is where the difference is how these DACs sound. And that's exactly the part that is where our ears and brain especially is the most sensitive to. So that is where you will hear, for instance, the violin somewhere. But if you have all the harmonics just 100% right, then you know, this is a Stradivarius. You know? Right. And that is such a tiny little thing where, and that makes it so extremely difficult, but also so extremely nice and interesting as a field, because in the tiniest little things, you can make huge differences. Whereas in the large things, you can actually not really make that much difference.
Right on. Well, thank you for the description and of why the chip and the implementation and really how this thing as a whole can, you know, make a nice product or one that's not so nice. And I've heard DACs that are not so nice, unfortunately. Oh, yeah. And this helps understand why that is so. Okay. All right. The next thing is, okay, you got method three, you got method four, you got your cables. And, you know, intellectually, these sound pretty awesome, right? They sound like good pieces of gear. But as a consumer, if I want to hear them, what is the best way for people to actually go, I don't want to say hands-on, but maybe ears-on with these pieces of equipment? Is this going to be at a show or at a showroom? How can people get access to the gear to see if this is something that they want?
Yeah, for now, the best way is actually to visit the shows. So we're doing a lot of audio shows. Last year, we did 5 different audio shows. So we're trying to be at all of the big ones. So we're usually always at the Capital Audio Fest in Washington. We're at the Pacific Audio Fest in Seattle. That's a great new upcoming show. So the next show will be the Expona in Chicago. That's a great one. So if people want to go there, it's quite central also in the US. That's going to be a big one. Then we'll be at the Dallas Lone Star Audio Fest in the first week of June. After that, there's going to be the Pacific Audio Fest. That's the end weekend of June. So then there's a couple more things in the making. But for sure, we'll be at the Capital Audio Fest again, which is usually around November in Washington, D.C., which is also a great show.
Outstanding.
So then,
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, you go ahead.
Yeah, so we're rapidly building out now a dealer network because we're a new brand. So we're doing everything we can to get this in, pretty much everybody's areas. So that is also rapidly expanding, and we'll actually post a updated list of dealers shortly on our website, and that's where people can also have some ears-on experience, as you say so nicely, with these products, because you really need to hear them. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question too. So how do people buy them when they decide that they want them? So that dealer network is going to be the source for purchasing, right?
Correct.
So, you know, for people that are watching, down in the notes below, I'll have a link to the website. On the website, you'll be able to find that dealer list, which will be updated as new dealers come in and that network expands, which is great. And I think for my last question, we're over time a little bit everybody. So please, please bear with us because these are all cool things. Let's talk a little bit about the future, right? So you've got the three, you've got the four, but I understand there's another product coming to the mix as well.
Yeah, so one of the things that we've always had as the first question that pops up, when people see these monoblocks, they go like, oh, that's very cool. But do you also have a stereo version? So that resulted into the new product that we're going to introduce at the Expona, and that's the Method 6. And it's conveniently 2x3. So it's essentially the same sound signature, if you will, which is transparent. It shouldn't have a signature. It's a very powerful, very, very nice, deep, wide soundstage capable amplifier, but in a stereo version. So that is also at a nicer price point for a lot of people, because two monoblocks is way more expensive, of course, than only one package. So yeah, we're quite excited about the thing, and we're going to show that to the world in Expona. That's a premiere.
That's awesome. Well, I will be there and I will get some footage for everybody. So for the folks that can't be at the show, you know, make sure you're subscribed to this channel so that you can see those updates. I look forward to seeing that. That's outstanding. Well, Hans, thank you so much for coming on the show today. This might be my favorite show so far this year. I love it when you can get kind of into the detail of these things and dig, you know, kind of deep and understand why. It's not so much we have this thing, but why is it this way? And really kind of expand my own knowledge and then everybody who's watching their knowledge as well. So thank you for that that description.
Yeah, one last thing that I had actually ready at hand here that we didn't really touch into too much at the amplifier still. You've seen some of the internals of amplifiers, right?
Absolutely.
One of the things that Infigo actually does... Oh, by the way, Infigo is the Latin word for impressive. So we try to just make impressive audio stuff. That's why we think it's pieces of furniture, you know? So people that see these things, they want to make sure that they have some pride of ownership and what have you. What is the first thing that happens? Suppose you buy a sports car and you get some friends over. What's the first thing you do? You pop the hood, right?
You look at the engine, right? Turn it on.
Well, that's the same thing with all the Infigo equipment. You can actually very easily pop the hood with just one thumbscrew and look inside. And you'll see that at the show. And you'll see everything nicely illuminated with blue LEDs and what have you, you know?
Oh, that's cool.
But there's
cool.
One thing that you will not be able to see, and that's the internals of the actual parts of the amplifier that work. And so this is... what is at work. So you see how many devices these are.
Oh, wow.
And that is one output stage of a Method 3. So there's hundreds of transistors actually at work, very small ones. So that makes them so nimble and so pure, you know, because suppose you have a rope pulling contest. If you have four big guys on one end of the rope, but you have 400 kids on the other side of the rope, who do you think wins?
Probably the 400 kids.
There you go. Well, the same sort of thing goes for all the details, you know, that we try to build into these products. And so we do it a little different than pretty much the standard approach. And that goes in all the details. So when you're at the Expona, I'd love to just go a little deeper with you into that sort of stuff.
Absolutely. I'll have my camera and we can talk very deeply and we can very specifically look at the devices while they're on hand. So I think that'll be great. I really look forward to that.
Excellent.
That's going to be outstanding. Anything else to close before we shut it down for the day?
It's amazing how fast the time goes because there are still really myriad of things that we could talk about. But we'll just talk some more at the show. But thank you so much for this interview. This was fun.
Yeah, no, thank you. Everybody out there, please take a moment, click the links down below, go check out the impressive Infigo Audio. I'm really excited to look closely at the DAC. I love DACs and that kind of stuff. I love to stream music and play digital files. So to me, it really speaks to the way that I consume music. So I can't wait to see that in person. Everybody out there, like and subscribe, visit the website, and I'll see everybody in the next video. Thanks.